Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Family and Community Show with your host, Reverend Reuben Dockery. We're happy that you are joining us this evening for a very, very productive conversation relative to black males in America being at risk. The title of our show tonight is Black Males in Crisis. Is there any hope for lost sons? Some people may take issue with that. Some may immediately identify with the seriousness, and others may question exactly what is the background or the motive of such a title. My hope is that after your dialogue tonight, we will be sharing you some information here on the Family Community Show in this particular episode. And my hope is that you'll walk away with a better understanding and perhaps a firmer grip on the issue that confronts many black males in America today. I need not tell you of the things that are constantly in news threads in most recent history. 2014 was a loaded year. And we've come into a new year, by the grace of God, 2015, and we have an opportunity. Many of you have been invited via our Facebook page, and there you've heard me announce that my personal New Year's resolution was to do everything that I can with God's help and your help as well to reach 5,000 at-risk males and to positively change their life. That's not a small task, but it's one that I believe it's obtainable. And again, we thank you for joining us. The way with the show will run tonight is that we will have open mic. I will begin the first maybe 10 minutes or so just sharing with you some factual information. You can feel free to call us here at 323-580-5654. Again, that's 323-580-5654, and we'll be happy to bring you right into our conversation. Because we have an open line for a number of people, we just ask that you be patient with us as we cue you in, and we will announce you as being our guest, and we'd like to hear from you. As you note in our description, this is an open mic thing, and we certainly want to hear from you. We're grateful for all that have tuned in this evening to this very important show, and we appreciate you taking the time to share with us. So, again, what we do is we open the conversation to everyone for their input, your concerns, your questions, or even your commentary. We're more than happy to receive that. We just ask that everyone keep it relevant to our conversation, and that we're able to be considerate of others and things of that nature. But I'm looking forward to having great dialogue with you. I will be talking about the 2015 seminar series. But let me begin first with the title of tonight's topic, and to give you some background as to why we said that. But before I do that, one other order of business here. We are on chat, and you can chat with us live here. You should be able to see that on your screen where we're in live chat. Feel free to chat with us tonight and write down your thoughts and comments via the blog talk log there, and we'll be happy to respond to you accordingly. Okay? And then, of course, most importantly, we want to hear from you directly. So, again, you can call us at that number, 323-580-5654. And I believe from there we should be able to have quite substantive dialogue. Again, the title of tonight's topic is Black Males in Crisis. Is there any hope for lost sons? You do not want to miss this conversation. I will be explaining this topic from the perspective of a parent, a clergy, and a social scientist. And your voice is very much appreciated and needed for this dialogue. We will discuss risk factors for police arrest of youth and talk about what should the church and the community, where should they stand, what should they do, as well as things that parents need to know as they rear black males from birth. And any other topic that you would like to share with us, we'll be happy, or a subtopic, we'd be happy to engage you in that. But for now, the next few minutes, I'm going to give you a little background and explain to you why, from a social scientist perspective, we are where we are. I believe I should probably tell you a little bit about myself. I am a husband and a father for 20 years now, going on 20 years, I'm sorry, we'll be married. And I have an 18-year-old daughter who's soon to go to college and a 16-year-old son who is a junior in high school. My background occupationally has been as an educator, most recently in the metropolitan Nashville-Davidson County Public Schools. We have pastored for the last 17 years now in Nashville-Davidson County. I'm originally from Chicago and came here to attend Fisk University, where I obtained my Bachelor's of Art degree with a concentration in history. And we were fortunate to also go to Tribeca Nazarene University and receive a Master's of Education in Leadership and Supervision. And currently we're candidate for the Doctorate of Philosophy with a concentration on K-12 educational leadership at Walden University, based out of Minneapolis, Minnesota. So, but outside of that, I've worked in the nonprofit sector now for the last going on 17 years. And we've also done a great deal of research as a community advocate here in Nashville. And we've traveled a little bit in the most recent years to engage other communities. And I'll talk a little bit more about those in terms of some of the places we've been and some of the places we aim to go with this series. But that's a little bit about myself. In the chat, feel free to request further information with our email there, and I'll deal with that in just a little bit after we take a break from our conversation. But now allow me to go and give you a little background on this topic here. Is there any hope for lost sons? The word crisis, as defined by Webster's Dictionary, is turning point of a disease. The turning point of a disease, excuse me, a decisive stage, time when anything is at its height. You have a crisis. When you can say that you're at the point that that thing has become a disease, it has taken over, and it could lead to demise and destruction. When you're at a very decisive point, or when that thing has reached a boiling point, if you will, or height. So how does this relate to African-American males or black males? When we look at the NAEP reporting, the National Academic Evaluation, Educational Performance Evaluation, we can see how there are some serious disparities, particularly put black males in danger of early school dropout, subsequently unemployment, and ultimately, for far too many of them, incarceration. And that is a cousin to the economic disparities that we see. Of course, when they drop out of school, as we just alluded to, they don't have appropriate education, not able to go to college and to expand their knowledge base and to build other employable skills and things of that nature. So they're at a deficit. The Center for Disease Control in 2000, really between beginning 2010, they began a study somewhere between 2012 and 2013, they identified the violence among youth as being a disease. And they specifically focused on African Americans. So I'm going to read you a little of the statistics that they offered in some of their studies there. And I want to emphasize the fact that they have identified this, particularly this youth violence, as being a disease and something worthy of being studied in order to find a serum or solution or cure for it. And this is what drives the seminar, and this is what drives this dialogue for tonight. In 2010, 4,828 young people ages 10 to 24 were victims of homicide, they report. An average of 13 each day. Homicide is the second leading cause of death for young people, ages 15 to 24 years of age. Among homicide victims 10 to 24 years old, in 2010, 86% or 4,171 were male, and 14%, 657, were female. 32.8% reported being in a physical fight in the 12 months preceding to the survey that was conducted. The prevalence was higher among males at 40.7% than females, which was at 24.4%. Among 10 to 24-year-olds, homicide is the leading cause of death for African Americans. I'll repeat that again. Among 10 to 24-year-olds, homicide is the leading cause of death for African Americans, the second leading cause of death for Hispanics, third leading cause of death among American Indians and Alaskan Natives. Juveniles less than 18 years old accounted for 13.7% of all violent crime arrests, and 22.5% of all property crime arrests in 2010. In 2010 also, 784 juveniles under 18 were arrested for murder. This is nationally now. 2,198 for forcible rape, and 35,001 for aggravated assault. And again, these are numbers or stats from the National Center for Injury Prevention, the Division of Violence Prevention with the Center for Disease Control. This report was published in 2012. Clearly, when we look at the African-American subgroup, the African-American male subgroup, they are at a point of crisis. Now, interestingly enough, these numbers or the trends have not turned drastically. As we look at the media and look at other various circumstances, it is clear that there is a serious problem and there is reason for concern. Who should be concerned? Who should be concerned? And that kind of leads us to some of the other conversation that we want to have relative to who should be involved. Now, the number is 323. That's 323-580-5654. I'd love for you to call and jump into this conversation, this dialogue. Love to have it with you. We hope that our Facebook friends are tuning in and listening with us. Share your ideas. We'd be happy to have you. Wherever you are in the United States, just give us a call at 323-580-5654, and we'll put you right on. But as you call, let me continue to share a little bit more information with you. Now, we mentioned that we'll discuss such issues as the risk factors for police arrests. Well, unfortunately, many good, well-intended individuals are not aware of civic expectations for their children, for young people. And because they're not aware, they tend not to share this with their children as they go out to the larger social context and public venues. And as a result, the children are feeling that, hey, I got a right and I got freedoms and I should be able to express myself and nobody should stop me. Well, there's some truth to that. However, that when we are in public settings among the greater society, in order for everyone to be safe, there must be laws and orders in order. And if we don't know what that order is and what those legal expectations are, we stand a great chance of violating them and finding ourselves on the negative end of the law. This is the leading cause for the risk of you being arrested by the police. Now, historically, what you'll find in our lecture is that there have been many issues or events documenting the abuse of police officers, particularly so in the South. Gratefully, America has grown and progressed such that that's not the issue anymore, and there are many laws protecting individuals from such abuse. Having said that, now the case is police are brought to certain neighborhoods based on crime reports and data. I've shared with you some of what the Center for Disease Control has reported, and much of their information comes from the United States Department of Justice. There's a division for youth, Department of Justice, or youth-related issues, as well as adults, and the Federal Bureau of Investigation, right, with police reports. Now, these numbers are real. They're not just snatched out of the sky, but they're real based on incidents where police are called to neighborhoods for one reason or another. And it explains why they're there. Now, unfortunately, what we're finding is that black males, particularly those at risk, tend to be angry, aggressive, and ultimately violent. And those who are the victims of their aggressive anger and violence are those who are closest to them. Hence what we call black-on-black crime. I don't like the notion no more than anyone else does. But in reality, it's something we have to contend with. So the question becomes, how do we fix it? How do we deal with that? And in reality, we are the solution. I think, though, that as a whole, when we are able to bring our best ideas together and we're able to develop a theoretical framework for solving these issues by providing cultural appreciation and respect for cultural identity and respect for heritage, respect for society, respect for authority, that we can bring our children in a lot more. As well, we have to work with government agencies to ensure that there are fair and equal opportunities economically as well as socially for forward progress. You know, but just because one does not have a job, it does not justify destructive behaviors and taking from others. And so we have a lot of work that could and should be done there. And one of the things that, again, we hope to do with this conversation is to bring that to bear. Now, we also promised to talk about what should the church, or I should say, where should the church and community stand? I can tell you as a pastor, many people believe that our focus is to pray and to trust God and to let God fix it. And I agree with that. But the question is, how will God do that? Simply, the answer is he's going to do it through us. So as we pray, prayer being a communication or dialogue with God, and even as we fast, that being taking an effort to make a sacrifice, we sacrifice and we ask God for the guidance. Well, thanks be to God. God has given me a vision and an idea on how we can build these buffers to deal with these risk factors, to eliminate the risk factors and eliminate the threats that put our young people at risk. Now, one of the things I want to do is, again, I want to remind you that you can call us here right now at 323-580-5654. That's 323-580-5654. You can use your cell phone if you're listening. You can use your computer however you wish. We'd be happy to entertain your comment, your questions, or your concerns. I will be talking a little bit about the things that parents need to know as they rear black males from birth in just a little bit. But what I'd like to do now is to take a brief break. And we'll talk about the upcoming events on the other side of that. Stay tuned. That you're just tuning in with us, you're listening to the Family and Community Show with your host, Reverend Reuben Dockery, and we're talking about black males in crisis. Is there any hope for lost sons? And I come to share with you, indeed there is. For the last few, almost 30 minutes now, we've been talking about the basis for the crisis. And I will reiterate the fact that by definition, a crisis is any time or any circumstance that you have a turning point of a disease, where this thing is going to really be destructive or destroy something. It's decisive in nature. And it is at the height, where circumstance is at its very height. And we've shared some information relative to particularly the Center for Disease Control, and how they have identified youth violence that quite often involves disproportionately African-American males or black males as a disease, and thus worthy of study and worthy of some solutions being found. And this is really what brings us to our conversation today. So I thank you for joining us. You can call us right now at 323-580-5654. Again, that's 323-580-5654. Love to have you call right now and talk with us. It's open mic, and we are happy to hear your questions, your comments, and even your concerns relative to this issue. Perhaps you take a different position. I'd love to hear that, too. I certainly can grow in this process. We're bringing some information, but we're very much open to dialoguing with you on these matters here. So by all means, do give us a call. Meanwhile, as we wait to hear your call, I'd like to share with you a little bit about the approach to solving these things. Where should the church stand? Because I'm a pastor, I mentioned to you in the description of this show that I'll be speaking from the position of a parent, a clergy, and a social scientist. But when we talk about the church, I'll put my pastor's hat on now. And for the last 17 years, I've been pastoring in the Nashville-Davidson County, Tennessee area. And I've come to find that many people look for not only a word of encouragement, but they look for guidance. And now more than ever before, what people are looking for is help rearing their children. And I believe that a healthy position for the church to take is to serve as a social support and a hospital of sorts, if you will, where individuals who are emotionally, psychologically wounded can come in and get the support and even referrals for other services that they may need from the church. I don't expect the pastor to be a physician, necessarily be a psychiatrist, or to be a social worker of sorts. While their role requires quite often them having at least the knowledge to refer people appropriately. However, I think it's reasonable for tithe paying, offering giving members to be able to come to their place of worship where they have spiritual leadership and to get that type of support, get that type of instruction, the type of guidance. But really, the church position should be on helping people establish healthy families and healthy lives. And when you do that, a lot of these problems can be resolved, particularly as it relates to the issue of fatherlessness and the fact that many children go to bed at night without a father sleeping under the roof with them. So they don't have that guidance and that instruction that they need. This is something that the church can, and I believe, should be actively engaged in terms of helping the biological parents, fathers and the mothers, males and the females, understand how and why it is so important for them to be an active part of the growth and development of these males who find themselves in crisis. That is the greatest hope for the lost sons. Understanding that relationship issues between parents, adults, often put children in the bind and behind the eight ball, if you will. It's important that even if a dad is not physically living with the mother, the ideal situation is that they work that out, but quite often that's not the reality. In those situations, it's important that both parents receive the counseling and support to have at least an amicable relationship in the interest of rearing a child, so that the son will be able to have that father present, that dad present. Now, that's not as easy said as done all the time, but sometimes males who are progenitors don't know how to be a father either. So it's necessary, again, the church can and the community can take the stand and the place that they will provide fatherly instructions or responsible fatherhood training and support. Where do you get those things from? Well, my organization, Building Families and Communities, Missions Incorporated, have worked on that very thing over the last 15 years, and this is one of the things that we're bringing to bear. We're endeavoring to take this to starting in Nashville and then ending up in 10 other cities outside of Nashville at the very least. And wherever we're invited or there's room for us to share that model, we've developed a research-based model to address that very thing. In the interest of saving the lives of black males, again, who find themselves in crisis. All right? Now, briefly, let me speak of some things that parents need to know as they rear black males from birth. You're going to always be a male from the time you're born. If you're a human being born with masculine reproductive organs, that qualifies you as a male. And these are dominant reproductive organs that qualifies you as a male. As you grow over time through life, you develop the behavioral patterns typically of a boy. And there are certain emotional drives that are consistent with all boys. Depending on the environment and exposure to certain ideas and other behavioral examples, you know, that kind of defines what type of boy. Typically, the black males that we're talking about grow up becoming very, very aggressive. And this usually results from feeling that I have to get in where I fit in, and I have to prove myself. I have to protect my own self-interest, and I have to be my own man, take care of me, and possibly sometimes they feel as though they have to take care of their mothers and their other siblings and things of that nature. But what is indicative of is the fact that that young man, while it is important that he learn to be responsible, often they engage themselves in behaviors that are inappropriate well ahead of time. Now, one of the reasons they can't do well in school, parents, is because they're focusing on adult decisions to be made. And so parents need to understand that black males need age-appropriate examples and guidance. Some programs take a stab at this, and you have to give them credit. Big brothers, big sisters, other programs in various communities aim to do that. I believe it's very important that you recognize the need as well to be very honest and transparent with these young men about who their biological progenitors are, or their dads are, and honest about the fact that though you may have grown up without that presence, there's an opportunity for you to turn things around. Now, the truth is there are a lot of dads who want to be in their son's life, but other variables and circumstances prevent them. And as a parent, you want to make sure, as a female parent, you want to make sure you're doing your best to prevent that. And for males who are irresponsible, there needs to be a focus on encouraging them and holding them to account. those are some things that you want to look at. Now, we've documented how there's a certain age that males in general, we're talking about black males now, particularly those in crisis, they shut down on mama's voice of authority. And there's a point where, not that they don't love you, and not that they don't hear you, or not that they don't respect you necessarily, but they're looking or seeking for their own concept of independence and manhood. And there are certain things they can't identify with mama. So they tend to look for manhood outside of the home, in the streets, if it's not there in their home, or in other venues. And so they're looking to mimic or to portray some of the things that they've seen. And because mama does not do that or cannot do that, it's difficult for her to fully appreciate where he's coming from. This is one of the reasons why it's so important, the village concept, to have strong male role models and healthy examples for young men that they can turn to, that mothers can turn to. Now a lot of mothers are afraid because we've seen people abuse that position so bad that it's hard to know who you can trust, you know. So culturally, there are some things we have to do subculturally within our neighborhoods, and the church can play a major role in building that bridge and breaking these barriers of communication and trust. Again, these are some of the things that we're speaking from a parental perspective. Now, as a father, I understand that because of my involvement with my son, he doesn't have much time for certain threats outside of the home and things of that nature. That's not to say he's not at threat of anything. However, because his time is managed and we're very focused on where he goes, we limit the chances of him being in certain situations that a lot of black males who are in crisis tend to find themselves in. Now, I'll say this. The number is 323-580-5654. Give us a call. 323-580-5654. If your child is standing on a corner at 12 o'clock midnight, whether he has a banana or a gun in his hand, what he is most at risk to is not having a parent that is managing his time and keeping him in an appropriate place. He's subject to any threat that is out there on that street. Frankly, he has no business there. Can we stop crime? People have been trying to do it for a long time, and all sorts of crime deterrence. In fact, that's what the criminal justice system was designed on, the notion that we will stop, we will reduce crime, encourage people to be rehabilitated. That's another story. That's another conversation. But what we can do is we can reel our children in, and we can let them know out of love we care for you. But that requires that you go out of the way to model for them certain behaviors and to ensure that they have the resources and opportunities for others. Now, that's a good segue into the 2015 seminar. Let me just share with you some of the items on the lecture in the seminar, give you a background on what that's about a little bit. And again, you can feel free to email me in our chat room, or I'll give you that information to reach me to get more details on this. But basically, the lecture is entitled Progression of African-American Male Hostility, Five Generations of Struggle, 1865 to 2015. Now, what is that all about, Doctor? What are you talking about? Where are you coming from with that? What we find is this, and this is what the seminar is based on. The lecture is designed to offer its participants a perspective of the root cause of anger and violence, displayed by powerless Afro males 5 generations after Afro-American emancipation in 1865. It provides an anthropological examination of the present Afro male's experience since gaining legal support for self-determination in 1865. So in other words, you get blacks, you get whites, you get Hispanics, you get Asians and other ethnic groups. Well, we're specifically looking at Afro-American, or what we today call black males or African-American males. And we're looking at how the turn in American history, January 31st, 1865, when the 13th Amendment was ratified by 28 states, making it unconstitutional to force black people in slavery anymore. You're free now. You can be an American citizen and live the American dream. From that time to now, there have been 5 generations. And many people worked hard to take advantage of that opportunity. Interestingly enough, what we find in 2015, as evidenced by the heated experience in 2014, is that Afro-American males, black males in particular, who are in crisis, find themselves becoming more incarcerated, and many of them dying ahead of time, 150 years after they've been set free. Why? What is it about the instruction or the examples that have been laid from previous generations that lead to this? Participants will learn about their social classification of the American subgroup, commonly known today as African American. Be presented with an ethnic profile of each generational era, from 1865 to 2015. And presented with a historical case studies of each generational era. And presented with an anthropological commentary explaining the connection each of these generations to present. So about the seminar objectives. The seminar addresses the dire need to assist communities in efforts to protect at-risk African-American males from the threats of street violence, as we see currently, incarceration and arrest that leads to incarceration, and untimely death. The impacts of challenging family dynamics, as we just spoke of, negative subcultural influence, and disconnect from civic engagement are addressed. Information shared could lead to a pro-social framework, this is what I was speaking of earlier, for assuming an absent paternal voice of instruction for at-risk males, an absent fatherly voice. During the seminar, participants are engaged on 3 levels of learning. These 3 levels of engagement are the historical lecture itself, self-reflective activities, and neighborhood-centered solutions. Now, let me go back for a second. I talked about a paternal voice of instruction. Were you aware that the juvenile court, according to Black's Law Dictionary, is defined as a body, a legal body, that serves as a paternal parent, or instead of a paternal parent. In other words, a father. There is a presumption that if a child is brought before the magistrate for committing some sort of offense, adjudicable offense as a juvenile, that child does not have a father, and the court is to stand in the stead of his father, which is again indicative of one of the major risk factors to the crisis that black males face in 2015. All right? I just wanted to make that point to you. And feel free to call me and talk with me. The number is 323-580-5654. Incidentally, you can archive this show later, and you may be listening live now. I don't know, but you can always go back and listen later as well. I want to let you know that we are looking for your financial support. Our goal is to raise $100,000 for 2015 and to reach 10 cities outside of Nashville, including Nashville to be 11, but 10 cities to share this information in this lecture and the seminar. Now, those cities include Chicago, St. Louis, Indianapolis, Indiana, the Detroit, Michigan area. They include in the South, of course, we talk about Nashville, the Memphis, Tennessee area, Birmingham, Alabama, Houston, Texas, Louisiana, and we talk about Gulf Coast states now, New Orleans, Louisiana, Miami, Florida. I think that's all of them, yes. And those are the cities that have certain things in common. When you look at the socioeconomic status of families in concentrated neighborhoods where there's high poverty, high numbers of school dropout, single-parent home, find these same issues to be prevalent. And this is what our research has offered us. And so we target those areas. And again, we're happy to take it beyond that, but that's our goal. But I need your help to do that. I need your help to do that. To that end, a GoFundMe account has been established. We do have a regular nonprofit organization and a 501c3 status. As you make your funds, we'll get your information, and we will reply back to you with other information. But our GoFundMe page, and incidentally, our web page is under construction right now. We're doing some things to tweak it. So bear with us there while we're under construction. That's bfcmissions.org. But the GoFundMe page is up and active, and it's a secure way to make your contribution. You can reach it either by going to our Facebook page at facebook.com/B as in boy, F as in Fred, C as in Charles, Missions, that's MISSIONS, and access the GoFundMe page there. Or you can email me directly at BFCMissions, that's B as in boy, F as in Fred, C as in Charles, MISSION, two S's, SS, at gmail.com. The difference there is that that's BFC Missions with two S's, MISSIONSS at gmail.com. Or you can go directly to the GoFundMe page, which is at www.gofundme.com/I-as-in-igloo-99-G-as-in-gag-6-G-as-in-gag. Again, that's www.gofundme.com/I-as-in-igloo-99-G-6-G. And you can make your contribution there. No contribution is too small. Again, our goal is $100,000 that allow us to come and to handpick individuals in those cities, working with local churches, with schools, and even juvenile courts to identify those who are most in need of the lecture and the seminar. Your help is very much needed and appreciated. Okay. Now, again, the number is 323-580-5654. Love to have you call and share with us. I'll continue to share with you what I have, and if we doesn't have any more participation or calls, we'll settle with that. But before I do that, before I go any further, let me share with you some other music. I started with Marvin Gaye. I believe he correctly expressed the sentiment that we see today for black males in crisis as a troubled man. The good news is, rhythm and blues can tell us about the problem, but often they don't offer any solution. We're grateful that The gospel is the good news. And there's good news. There's a solution to all of our problems. So let me just share with you briefly this brief musical break. And then when we come back, I will talk with you a little bit more about the layout for the instructional levels of learning for the lecture itself. Alrighty. Something to work with and something to look forward to. I appreciate the songwriter as they pen the words. Earth has no sorrow that heaven cannot heal. All right, let's get on with it. We still have about 36 minutes to go, and there's still time and opportunity for you to call us right now. Call us right now if you're listening at 323-580-5654. Again, that's 323-580-5654. We're happy to talk with you right here live on air and for you to share your ideas with us. You're a very important part of this dialogue. I should say also, for those of you who want to reach me directly, you can feel free to call me at my line at 615-498-4669. That's 615-498-4669. And we are currently open for chat. Feel free to chat with us here. And after we finish our presentation here, if no one else calls, we'll stay open for chat here and you can communicate with us that way until our show is finished. We still have about 35 minutes to go. But it's your time. It's your time. Call us. Call us and share with us. Tell me what you think about it. Tell me what's on your mind. Let me know how you see this thing. And let's go together. Meanwhile, I'll share with you a little bit more about the lecture seminar series that you're expecting. And by the way, I should mention that we're tentatively working to schedule that for the end of February. That would be the weekend of February. I think the last Saturday in February is the 28th. And so we're looking at, Lord, be our help, bringing that to Nashville as our first city, Nashville, on February, starting the 27th. And basically we'll have an exhibit and a meet and greet in the Nashville area. There is a historical exhibit that dates back 150 years. We're looking at various incidents that have impacted the subgroup of Afro-American males, today commonly called African-American males, and it'll help us to explain some things. And then on that Saturday, we would have the actual lecture itself, and then to follow that, those breakout activities that are part of the seminar itself. So you have an opportunity to really put your hands around some things, and you'll find it most instructive and interactive. And we appreciate, again, you listening, if you're listening tonight. If you archive us later, thank you for doing so. And do take advantage of this opportunity to support us financially at our GoFundMe page. I want to reiterate that you can go directly to GoFundMe at www.gofundme.com / I as in igloo 99, G as in gag, 6, G as in gag. And or you can access it from our Facebook page, which is www.facebook.com/BFC Missions. Email me directly if you have you want to talk with me about anything else, or you just have some other things you want to share. You can email me at BFCMISSION2S is to follow, SS at gmail.com. So that's BFC Missions with two S's at the end of missions at gmail.com. Be happy to converse with you there. All right. There's still time for you to give us a call right now. But meanwhile, let me just kind of give you a little bit more information. If you call, we'll go right to you already. So early I mentioned to you what the objectives for the seminar were. And I ended that by saying there were three levels of engagement in this seminar. And one of them was the lecture. The other was the self-reflective activities. And the third were neighborhood-centered solutions. We do want to bring about an end, a focused and deliberate end to this problem, terms of the crisis that African-American males find themselves in. Now, to that end, it's important to understand the background and the history that brought them to where they are. They didn't just pop at the sky. This crisis has been brewing for some time. On this level, a 45-minute lecture entitled Progression of African-American Male Hostility, Five Generations of Struggle from 1865 to 2015 will offer that anthropological explanation I mentioned earlier for the progression or the growth of maladaptive behavior presently manifested in society today on part of many black males. That's what the lecture focuses itself on. And after this very engaging and thrilling lecture, we will break off into groups. And the first group activities will be centered around self-reflective activities. On this level, participants are encouraged to reflect on the nature of urban challenges confronted by at-risk African-American males. Male youth today. Via group discussions and interactive activities, they will construct strategies for appropriate family-centered interventions. Those are interventions to the breakdowns of their own family dynamics within themselves, inter and intrapersonally. Okay? So they're looking at themselves A lot of times people tend to put the blame outside on someone else, but we want to encourage you to look at yourself, not to beat yourself up, but to see how you can improve and understand the nature of your role you play. And then lastly, the neighborhood-centered solutions is a activity set that's based on participants engaging in a reflective process, again, which allows them to examine the risk factors that we discussed earlier that put black males at risk, okay, such as to being arrested or dying in the streets or killing someone else, being incarcerated. They will further extend on the knowledge that they gain in the lecture and the activities that they just participated in by themselves constructing. This is the beauty of it right here. We take those who are at risk, and some might argue the nature of the problem, and we allow them to be the part of the solution, right? In doing so, they will construct family and neighborhood-centered plans for redirecting at-risk males in a pro-social direction. Now, when you come to the government and you want to protest and you want to march and you want to express grievances, it's so important to be able to articulate what those are, right? And most importantly, it's important to be able to articulate, what the end game is. What are you looking for? Here, these young men are able to process their own emotions and behaviors and outcomes and come up with the things that will encourage and support them in stopping the destructive, aggressive behaviors that we've seen, not only within the family context, but within a larger community or within the neighborhood as well. This way, government plays a very important role and providing the resources and opportunities to those communities. So I'm sure you'll find this to be very instructive in nature. We're happy to be able to bring it. And again, we have another 27 minutes or so here. Love to have you tune in with us and give us some. Talk to us. 323-580-5654. After tonight, you can call me directly, 615-498-4669, or email me at bfcmissions, MISSION with two S's, SS, @gmail.com. We need your funding and your support. You email me, I'll be able to send you more information about the lecture and the seminar, as well as our GoFundMe page. As I mentioned, our web page, our regular nonprofit web page, is under construction right now, so bear with us there. We're also on Facebook. You can reach us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/BFC Missions. That's with one S. You can access the GoFundMe page from there as well. I think I have been saying / and it looks like this may be / This is actually / for the www.facebook.com/BFC Missions, as well as www.GoFundMe, GoFundMe.com/I99G6G. And again, those are the ways that you can help us today, and we're always grateful for you. All right. Alrighty, I'm looking at our chat here, and I'm looking to entertain your conversation. I'd love to hear from you. Feel free to chat with us right now, and we'll be happy to engage you as you do so. Hello, how are you? Hello, how are you?
Hello, how are you?
Hello?
Hello?
Is this Pianchi?
Yeah, I was just listening.
Okay, how you doing?
Pretty good.
Great, great, great. Listen, I appreciate you calling. We open the phone lines for open mic, and I'd love to hear your comments or questions. Appreciate you tuning in with us, my friend.
All right, well, if I have something to say, I'll holler back at you in there.
Okay, all right. Well, keep on listening to us and do follow us. As we mentioned, we are looking to share this in larger areas there.
Okay.
All right. God bless you, sir.
Sure.
All right. So, again, we appreciate the caller sharing with us. I want to continue to share a little bit more about some of the substantive issues that we tend to find, particularly within African-American neighborhoods. And I'm sure you all have heard this before, the idea that snitches get stitches and wind up in ditches. Having grown up in Chicago in the streets and what have you, I can appreciate the notion that you should be loyal to your friends and that you shouldn't rat on anybody. But what I also found is that those same so-called friends are the ones that leave you to hang out and dry. You wake up and you look up, man, and you think you can depend on them, they're gone. They drop you like a hot potato, like a bad habit. And, you know, the truth is, all of us running the streets were scared. One was scared, another was glad he was scared. And the truth of the matter is, all of us were looking for some real guidance. We were trying to find something to make ourselves be important, you know. And we thought the streets and our loose association with the groups or gangs would be the answer. And what we found out is that there was little to no real structure or leadership. And interestingly, that's what we've seen with a lot of the, I saw a lot of people in their face, they really meant well with their protests here recently, but they just lacked the guidance and the leadership to really help them bring solutions. I saw an image of one lady just crying, you know, with the sign saying, "We need answers, we need answers." And I agree with her, we do. And again, this is one of the reasons why my personal resolution is to use the experiences and opportunities that God has afforded me to offer some sort of directional guidance here. And I'm convinced that we have what it takes to resolve these issues. I just cannot believe that we can't do it. Now, if anything we learn about God and His Word is true, certainly we have everything we need. But I'm convinced that we have one another, and together we can make that difference. For those of you who want to give us a call, we still have about 21 minutes here. You have time. Love to hear from you. The number is 323-580-5654. Would love to hear from you and dialogue with you. One thing I realize is that time is a funny thing, man. It if you get up on time, it allows you to keep up with it. If you get up too late, it'll leave you and never come back for you, right? But if you play time cheap, you'll miss out on it, and it could be the most precious commodity in your life. And what we have right now is the opportunity to shape the next 25 to 50 years, really next generation, next 30 years from 2015 to 2025. You know, that'd be another 30 years, sixth generation from being set free in slavery in America for people of Afro descent. And our young people desperately need that. You know, I told my son that if you find somebody willing to share with you their real life experiences and there's something you can learn from it, by all means, embrace that knowledge and be able to share it with someone else. ultimately, you know. But it's so important that we are open and transparent about these truths that are self-evident, you know, and being able to keep ourselves above the suspicion of self-destruction. The truth of the matter is, if we don't learn from our past, we're doomed to repeat those things, and not only the good things, but the negative things as well. And this is what the 2015 lecture and seminar series is really geared to do, is to first bring understanding as to how we got here, and then next to allow us to collectively use this information to take us further. If we don't do that, again, we'll find ourselves on the peripheries of society. I'd just like to give an excerpt from the lecture here while we have the next few minutes, and the phone lines are open. Feel free to call us right here at 323-580-5654. Anyone like to chime in, jump right in. We'll stop and we'll give our full attention to you. We have another 18 minutes and to go here. For those that are still listening, and even those that might archive the show later, I do want to share this a little bit with you. And this is directly from the lecture itself. This is part of what you will get among the other great information. You know, let me just begin to read. This is a excerpt from the Declaration of Independence of the United States of America. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are established among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. I contend that the issue for a lot of not only young but old Afro males is that there's a feeling, I have no consent in the manner in which I'm governing America. And as a result of that, I'm angry and I'm frustrated and I'm fidgety and I'm about ready to go to war because it seems like don't nobody hear me and they're not feeling my pain. Now, interestingly enough, these guys that framed this country and the basis of their independence, the words they use is that it was a self-evident truth that all men, and it seems as if there was a focus on something. And this is a part, I'm just going to read you the first paragraph of the lecture. The founding fathers of the United States of America seem to have functionally defined manhood as a requirement of American independence. The formal end to American Civil War brought opportunities for many. Specifically, for the newly freed Afro male, there was an opportunity to become a man in the context of American independence. Perhaps the greatest frustration experienced by the collective Afro-American male genre historically is the challenge of being recognized and respected as a man in America. Now, interestingly enough, when slavery was ended, the North had an idea of how to reconstruct America, and the South had an idea. Ultimately, both the North and the South spent many lives, white and black, 54th Massachusetts is a great example of it, to bring an end to slavery. But it seems to me, as a student of history, that the one group that did not have a firm agenda that will be passed down from one generation to the next is the African American. Now, that's not to say that there were not individuals on top of the game. That's not to say that people like Booker T. Washington, Du Bois, and people like Frederick Douglass and Harem Revels and all those other brothers that went to Congress and what have you, that's not to say they were not on top of their game. However, the important lessons that they learned and the experiences that they offered and that they went through seems not to have gotten to this fifth generation in 2015. So young people seem to think that there is no one that they can really turn to that really understands and hear their voice. And when you really look at the rap music and the hip-hop and rap industry and its evolution, you can see how this feeling has evolved over time, that you're not feeling me, so I'm going to let you feel me. You're not hearing me, so I'm going to make you hear me. You're not respecting me, so I'm going to give you some of my frustration. You know, at the end of the day, who's going to lose? Who's going to win? You know, there was a case that we can go in and out and do whatever we want to in other countries and other parts of the world. Maybe that would work, but the truth is, when these young cats commit crimes, excuse my my colloquial expression, but when these cats commit crimes, they run back to mama's house, big mama's house, or to their girlfriends or somebody that will let them go, and you know, and they run the block out, run the whole block out, bring the police and even other people looking for them to somebody else's house, bringing all the trouble to somebody else's house that they didn't even ask for. You know, we just recently had here in Nashville a poor child, 13 years old, lose their life to a drive-by shooting. You know, some frustrated guy shooting, looking for somebody else, and this poor innocent baby has become the victim of that circumstance. You know, and what is it all about? What is it for? And in reality, these young men, again, are so frustrated and so anguished that they're looking for somebody or something that they can release and express with. One of the things I will talk about in the lecture and the workshop activities is the continuum of violence, how it grows and where it comes from. So these are things that, again, we want to let you know that we're focusing on. Let me reiterate how you can be in touch with us here and again, encourage you to give us a call here the number here is 323-580-5654. We still have 11 minutes. It's not too late for you to share your thought and your idea. Wrap this up. These shows will be recorded, so you can go back at a later date and to archive them and listen to them in entirety. You can reach me directly at 615-498-4669. I'd love to talk with you. Or email, shoot me an email at my email at bfcmisisonss@gmail.com. Incidentally, we are still looking for your financial support for the 2015 Traveling Lecture and Seminar Series, going to a total of 11 cities here in the United States of America. And we've identified those. I'll share with them again. That's Chicago, that's Detroit, and when we say that, we're speaking of the general area, Chicago, Detroit, St. Louis, Indianapolis, Indiana. And then we're looking in that's the Midwest region. In the southern region, we're looking at the Nashville area, of course, as we mentioned, Memphis, Tennessee, Birmingham, Alabama, and Columbus, Mississippi is in the south. And then on the Gulf Coast region, we're looking at Houston, Texas, Miami, Florida, as well as New Orleans, Louisiana. All of those states have some of the same demographic issues in common, and we're looking to take that and to develop our further research and data on those things and bringing that to where we can have a greater national model, ultimately, of how to really resolve these issues. And if we're fortunate, we'll be able to share that in other areas. But those are our target areas. And, again, we appreciate you joining with us here. Still got 9 minutes. I'll be happy to hear from you. But while you make up your mind to call 323-580-5654, and again, we appreciate our other caller earlier calling in. Always happy to have you. And it's not too late for you to share in, to jump right in and talk with us either. We still have you live. Again, I want to emphasize the fact that what this is really all about is substantive resolution. I don't believe that it's healthy to encourage people to be driven by emotion and passion without first logically processing the issue and being reasonable. You know, it's easy for you to jump out there in the water, but if you can't swim, and if you don't know how to float, you're in trouble. So it's important, again, to empower people with knowledge and understanding. That's largely what this is all about. Please go to our GoFundMe page. Again, I'll emphasize that GoFundMe page is at www.gofundme.com/I as in igloo 99G as in go 6G as in go, and you can reach us there at our GoFundMe page, and we appreciate you helping us there with getting this out to these total of 11 cities, 10 cities outside of Nashville, and we're grateful again for all of your all of you who have either listened or gave us a call in, and we certainly want you to be a part of this. I'll give you my personal number again. The number I've been giving you is the number for the call-in. However, I'll give you my personal number again so you can call us, and that is 615-498-4669, and that's here in the Nashville area. You can email me directly at bfcmissions@gmail.com. Be happy to converse with you there as well. So what we'll do is I'm going to share with you a little bit more music. This gentleman is out of New Orleans, Louisiana. He's one of the people that we're looking to work with down there. He has a group down there, band, that plays doing Mardi Gras and those sort of things. And hopefully we can meet him down there. If you're listening from New Orleans, Louisiana, we hope to touch base with you. We'll listen to a little bit. His name is Mario Abney. He's with the Mario Abney Quartet. And this piece is entitled Vibing. Let's vibe with him for a few minutes, and we'll prepare to bring our show to a close. All righty. And again, we thank all of you who have tuned in to the Family and Community Show. It's been a pleasure serving you. Your host is Reverend Reuben Y. Dockery Sr., and we will be sharing with you future shows, and hope you stay in tune with us. I intend to re-air this show on this coming Tuesday, Tuesday the 13th. So this show will re-air on Tuesday, January 13th at the 7 o'clock hour. For those of you who would like to, who missed it, you can be with us and hear it. But of course, you can archive it anytime you like from this address here. We thank you again, and we do hope that you will assist us with our fundraising goal to get this very important seminar and lecture series on the road out through our 10 cities to include Nashville, Tennessee. We appreciate you, and we look forward to your support and pray that we'll see you in those cities that we've identified. Until then, we're going to sign off now, and we're going to sign off with some good news, and then we will see you on our next show.